Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining today's webinar, Introduction to Microsoft R Open. Presenting today is David Smith, our community lead here at Microsoft. Before we begin, I'd like to cover a few housekeeping items. Today's presentation will run about an hour. The webinar is being recorded and will be available on demand within 48 hours. A copy of today's presentation and recording link will be sent to you via email once the files are available. If you have any questions during the webcast, please enter your question in the Q&A widget on the left of your screen and click Submit. We'll try and get through as many questions as we can during the live broadcast. Before we start our live presentation, I'd like to run a quick poll. Which statement best matches your relationship to R? Give everybody a moment to answer that question. Thank you for your participation. It helps in tailoring the presentation. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close the poll and share results. We have 31% completely new to R but want to learn more. 38% I'm learning R, 28% I'm an experienced R user. Great, thank you so much. With that, I'd like to go ahead and turn the presentation over to our speaker, David. Go ahead.
All right, thank you, Yoni, and welcome everybody to today's webinar. It's a great pleasure for me to be able to introduce you to the R language and Microsoft R Open. As Yoni said, I'm David Smith. I'm the R community lead at Microsoft. And for the last 7 or so years, I've been writing daily at the Revolutions blog about R, applications of R, and data science. So if you're interested in more of the background of many of the things that I'll be talking about today, please check out the blog. And you can find a link to the blog in the resource list that's on the right-hand side of your screen, the fourth one down there, Revolutions blog. You might also know me as the co-author of the Introduction to R manual, along with Bill Venables and the members of the R core team. If you've downloaded and used R, you've probably seen that manual. I'm to blame for many of the graphic sections of that manual if you've had a look at those. But anyway, today, since we have so many people on the audience, which is great, that are either brand new to R or just learning R, I'll be giving an introduction to the R language, its background, applications of R, how people use it. And then also talking a bit about Microsoft R Open, which is Microsoft's enhanced distribution of open source R. I will be doing a demo later on in the session, so if you haven't seen R before, give you a little bit of a taste of what the language looks like, and also go to a bit of an in-depth demo as well on one of my favorite topics, which is data visualization with R. As Yoni mentioned, we will have plenty of time for questions and answers at the end of the session. So as I'm talking, if anything comes to mind, please go ahead and enter your question in the Q&A box, and we'll address as many of those as we can in the time we have available at the end. So let's start off at the beginning. For those of you that are not familiar with R, this is what it is. R is the most widely used data analysis software out there today. It's open source, so there's no real tracking around it, but we estimate that there are more than 2 million data scientists, statisticians, analysts, quantitative analysts, you name it. Anybody doing statistical analysis with data is probably using R today. And why is that? I've been using R myself ever since the project began back in the mid-90s and even before that in its predecessor language S. And the reason why I gravitated towards R is because everything is in that language that you need to do statistical analysis. Whether it's basic data import and manipulation, whether it's data visualization or advanced statistical modeling, all that is built right there into the language. And if it's not, you can add it. It's a flexible and extensible language. And really what that means for me personally is I can get my data science work done much faster in R than I can in any other language. And one of my favorite hobbies is around data visualizations. I was inspired as a young teenager by Edward Tufte and his books on data visualization. And for me, it's great to see that R reflects a lot of those principles of people like Ed Tufte and Bill Cleveland and the pioneers of data visualization in the capabilities that R provides. And that's why when you see those really cool data visualizations in things like the New York Times or The Economist or the Flowing Data blog, you'll probably find that those data visualizations were created in the R language. Because it's so flexible for creating new and unique data viz. And we'll see some examples of that in the session later on today. Now, everybody's probably heard that data science is a hot topic, and there's this real talent gap around data scientists today. Companies looking to make sense of all this data that they've collected are really looking to hire data scientists to make sense of it all. And for companies that are working with legacy analytics platforms, it's kind of hard to find those data scientists. But everybody today is learning R. New graduates out of data science master's degrees, statistics degrees, have used R in their training. So they're coming out of school directly, already trained up in R. So that's a great way to fill that talent gap, is by hiring people with those R skills. And of course, most importantly, R is an open source project. It's free to download. Anybody can use it and access it and inspect it. But one of the great things about R is the community that is built around it, that have really expanded the leading edge of statistics and analytics research by contributing to the R project. And they contribute to R in the form of packages. I'm going to be talking about packages quite a lot in the presentation today. And these are add-on modules that people in the open source community have created and shared on a network called CRAN, the Comprehensive R Archive Network. And there are packages for just about everything. You know, there are more than 7,000 of them, almost 8,000 today, in fact. So if you're working in the pharmaceutical industry, you're analyzing clinical trials from drug programs, there's a module, a package in R for clinical trial design. If you're working in the financial industry and you want to model econometric data, you know, there's a package in R for econometrics. If you're doing time series analysis, there's a package in R for time series. Like, this is just a very, very small selection of the packages that are available for R, but the bottom line is if somebody's done it before, it's likely to be available as a package that extends R. And that's because most of the primary research, in fact, at the forefront of statistical analysis and data mining is done in the R language first and then contributed to CRAN. Now, as I mentioned, I've been using R for a long time. It's actually one of the oldest open source projects around. Linux in itself is of a similar vintage. R itself started as a research project in Auckland, New Zealand, back in 1993 by a couple of stats professors. You can see Ross Sahaka there on the right of the picture and Robert Gentleman there on the left at a cafe in New Zealand where they first discussed putting the project together. Pretty soon, it became an open source project and was released in 1995 as open source software. And then in 1997, a group of about 20 leading academics and what we call today data scientists and computer scientists formed around this open source project to create the R core group. And today that's a group of 20 committers that keep the R project moving forward. On the governance side, the R Foundation, which actually holds the copyrights to the R code and manages the project, was formed in 2003 and it's based in Austria. Going more on the commercial side, Revolution Analytics is a company that was founded in 2007. I actually started with Revolution Analytics back then to bring R to the commercial sector, whereas up until then it was really only known in the academic sector. And as we'll look at some of the applications later on, we can see it's really taken off in the commercial sector as well since that time. One of the sort of additions that we provided to R was Revolution R Open, which was launched in 2014, and later became Microsoft R Open, which we're talking about today when Microsoft acquired Revolution Analytics back in 2015. One last thing to mention also in 2015 was the R Consortium, which was founded back then. The R Consortium is a trade group that helps promote R and support the R community, and I'm very proud to say that Microsoft is a platinum founding member of the R Consortium, along with other companies like R Studio, Google, Mango, and so on. Over that period, you know, since our exemption, R has really taken off like a rocket. It is the number one software for data science today, and you can see that reflected on the left-hand chart, which is the Rexa Data Miner Survey, which has been conducted about annually since 2007. And you can see in every year that survey has been conducted of data miners around the world, the number of analytical professionals reporting using R has climbed and climbed and climbed. Today that stands at 76%, it's number one on that score. And same thing, over time, the number of people that select R as their primary data analytics software has also increased. And today that stands as 36% of people use R as their primary tool. And again, R is number one in that category as well. Now, that particular survey was done amongst data miners and today data scientists. But even amongst general purpose languages, R is extraordinarily popular. On the right-hand side, you can see the IEEE Spectrum top programming languages rankings just from last year, late last year. And you can see that R is number six, which is really amazing considering that it's a special purpose language for data science. And it's right there up amongst general purpose languages like Java and C++ and Python. So an amazingly popular language. And a huge community has built up around R as well. If you're interested in getting into R, I do suggest joining one of the local R user groups. There are about 200 of them worldwide. You can find where to find a local R user group at the Microsoft Data Science User Group website, msdsug.microsoft.com, and you can find that link in your resource list as well, second from the bottom there. Great way to find a local R user group, and if you happen to run an R user group or would like to start up one in your area, Microsoft also provides sponsorships for R user groups, and you can find out information about that sponsorship program at the same site. So before I get into some of the details of R itself and the demo, especially for those people that are new to R, I think a really good way to get a sense of what R is all about is to have a look at some of the ways that people and companies in particular are using R today. So let's have a look at some applications of R. This is one of my favorite applications, in fact. This is a fairly old one in the sense that this was happened in 2009. You might remember back in 2009, Michael Jackson, the pop singer, died very suddenly. And the New York Times, which was really a pioneer of telling stories with data and providing interactive data visualizations on their website, had this interactive tool up on their website that same day. It's basically a historical discography of Michael Jackson's biggest hits, in fact, all of his hits over time. Every blue line that you can see on that screen is one of Michael Jackson's singles. You can see the second line there is for Rockin' Robin, which entered the charts in February 1972, went up to number two in the Billboard charts by mid-year, and then dropped off over the next couple of months. And this app actually lets you scroll through an entire timeline, seeing all of Michael Jackson's albums over that period, and lets you explore his popularity and how individual singles did over that time. It was a really innovative act, you know, even today for that. But what's incredible about this particular interactive application was that the New York Times had this application up on their website 3 hours after Michael Jackson was reported dead. That is just an amazing feat of engineering and of vision. But the New York Times, Amanda Cox, in fact, from the New York Times mentioned to me that they couldn't have built this application in any language other than R, because it's only in R that lets you visualize and create these analyses in such a short space of time. Amanda Cox, by the way, was recently promoted to the editor of the Upshot section of the New York Times, so we expect to see even more R-related graphics there over the next few years. Next example I wanted to give you is from the banking industry. You know, banking and investment finance have always been at the leaders of using advanced statistical analysis techniques of a way of managing finances and of investing in companies. On the left-hand side, you can see a couple of charts that come from ANZ Bank, the largest bank in the Southern Hemisphere, which uses R for credit risk analysis. to decide which people are eligible for certain types of loans, for example, and to manage entire portfolios of loans to understand the risk associated with that portfolio and how much capital reserves they need to have in the event of outcomes. On the right-hand side is another example, which comes from an investment bank on the West Coast called American Century. They've taken some real innovations when it comes to applying statistical techniques from other domains into the finance industry. Social network analysis has been a big thing over the last few years with the rise of social networks like Facebook, for example. But they've taken that same idea of looking at connections, in this case, not between people, but connections between companies and their suppliers. You know, which companies supply parts to manufacturing companies, which companies are interconnected in a financial sense. And they can build this economic ecosystem of all sorts of companies and how they're interrelated, and use those interrelations to drive the correlations that are expected in the stock prices example, for example, of those companies, which they use to drive their investment decisions to great effect. So it's another very innovative use of the R language there. I mentioned Facebook just now, and as it turns out, Facebook is also a really big user of R as well. In fact, if you're interested in learning a little bit about R, Facebook actually provides some online courses. There's a couple of links on there which you'll be able to follow when you get those slides, where Facebook talks about how they use R for exploratory data analysis. Using the Facebook data, and also of experimental analysis. And this is a really interesting side of things. People doing design of experiments now in the web application side of things, mobile applications as well. You know, Facebook has such a large user base that they don't roll out new features to everybody all at once. Instead, if they want to make a tweak to, you know, where a button appears in the mobile application or a new feature that's added to the web-based application, they'll roll that out to a small subset of their user base. And in fact, they'll roll out different variations to separate randomly selected subsets of the user base and use the design of experiments and experimental analysis functionality in R to test the outcome of these new features rolled out to small subsets, and they use that to decide which features actually go into the live production version that is rolled out to everybody. And again, like with the New York Times example, the reasons why they use R is to be able to move fast. Solomon Messing, who's a data scientist at Facebook, said that they use R to move fast when they get a new data set, because with R, they don't need to develop custom tools or write new code. Instead, they can just go about and cleaning and exploring the data with the functionality that's built right there into R and available with add-on R packages. And then one more example comes from Zillow. Zillow is the real estate website. You might have used Zillow if you are looking to buy a house, or perhaps, you know, looking to sell your house and wondering how much it might be worth. In terms of how much it might be worth, sort of the main feature of the Zillow, you know, application is what they call their Zestimate. It's Zillow's estimate of what your house might be worth or what it might be worth to rent. And they do that analysis. They provide that Zestimate through statistical analysis. They take in all sorts of data about the neighborhood, other house sales, comparative sales in the region, crime rates, even things like that. All sorts of variables go into Zillow's Zestimate, which they use to give a very precise estimate of what your house might be worth. And they do that once again with the statistical forecasting capabilities that are built right into the R language. And then the final example I want to give is a homegrown one. It comes from Microsoft's Azure Cloud. The Azure Cloud is in, I think, about 30 regions worldwide today. You know, these are server farms, which require all sorts of machines and RAM and things like that. And managing that growth has been driven by advanced analytics once again with the R language. So Microsoft Azure uses R to make it reliable in the sense of capacity planning, you know, trying to figure out how fast, how much growth the Azure network is going to experience, how much additional machines they're going to need to purchase, and they do that using one of those add-on packages I mentioned for R, in this case the forecast package, using historical data to try and forecast what their requirements are for growth. And in fact, our own IT department that provisions our own laptops and desktop machines uses the same technique to figure out how much RAM they need to have on hand to provide to the employees here at Microsoft. Microsoft Azure also uses R for system monitoring and alerting. Just having a look at people's experiences using the configuration tools, for example, monitoring which people succeed or perhaps don't succeed, and using that to improve the interface of that tool. And they also do it for things like having a look at abnormal login detection. You know, they have a look at time series of people making login attempts and use the anomaly detection features that exist within R packages to see when there's unusual activities around login detection, and they use that to enhance the security of the Microsoft Azure network. So we use a lot of R here internally at Microsoft as well. Now this might be a point where you might be having a bit of a question in your mind perhaps. You know, we're talking about R, you know, it's open source. What's Microsoft doing using all of this open source software? But of course, as it turns out, Microsoft loves open source software today. This is a picture from the Build conference last year, where Satya, of course, declared that Microsoft loves Linux. And in fact, Microsoft has been doing a lot with open source software over the last few years, from releasing .NET as open source software to providing their own Linux distributions to supporting Linux in the Azure cloud environment. And of course, one of those investments in open source software is the one that I want to talk to you about here today, and that's Microsoft R Open. Microsoft brought this on from the Revolution Analytics acquisition when it was Revolution R Open. Now it's Microsoft Open and is Microsoft's enhanced open source R distribution. Now it's completely compatible with everything R. It's based on the R from the R Foundation, built on top of the code that comes from the R project. And as a result, it's 100% compatible with everything R. All our scripts, all our packages, all applications that use R, 100% with compatible with Microsoft R Open. The only differences are is Microsoft R Open is faster. We make it faster by linking it with multi-threaded libraries, which make the best use of the processing power available in your CPUs, as we'll see a little bit later on. We also put a focus on reproducibility in Microsoft R Open. I'll have more to say about what that means in a second, but one of the things that we've introduced is a CRAN time machine. So you can go back in time and see different versions of those 7,000 packages that exist in the CRAN network and get access to them easily. Microsoft Open is, of course, supported on Windows, but also on Mac and Linux, and is available as a free download today from mran.microsoft.com. And if you'd like to try out Microsoft R Open yourself, you can use the Download Microsoft R Open link on the resource list on the right-hand side of your screen. I mentioned that performance with the multi-threading, so I thought I'd go into a little bit more detail about that. You'll see it in the demo a bit later on, but the bottom line is for highly mathematical operations like matrix multiplications or singular value decomposition, things like that, you'll see a huge benefit in performance, even on single core machines, sometimes up to a 20 times factor or so. We don't do that by changing R. All we do is change the standard libraries that R calls out to when it does these mathematical operations. The standard libraries, for those in the know, are the BLAST and LaTeX algorithms, and we just swap in instead what's called the Intel math kernel libraries, so R uses those instead. If you're downloading Microsoft R Open, this is an optional add-on. You'll download a separate MKL downloader from the same place you download Microsoft R Open from MRAN for Windows and Linux platforms. By the way, on Mac, there's no separate download because we use the built-in Accelerate framework that exists on Mac, but you get about the same kind of performance benefits. The benefits really come from using high-performance algorithms that Intel has specially designed to work well with the Intel chipset that probably exists in your computer. It does work with other chipsets as well, but you get the best performance with Intel. And then if you have a multi-core machine, So rather than just having one CPU, you have two CPUs or four or eight, as many machines these days do, you get an additional increase in performance because it will use all those cores at once instead, as with ordinary R, just using a single processor at a time. All these benefits come without the need to change any R code at all. Just if you're a current R user, just take the same scripts, functions, and packages you're already using. If you run them in Microsoft R Open and they use these types of mathematical operations, you'll find that there's a performance benefit. The other aspect of Microsoft R Open that's a little different from the way that standard R works is around reproducibility. Reproducibility, especially for people that work in sort of the academic sector, you might have heard about this. If you work in science, you've probably heard about this. It's an important issue about making it possible for people that do scientific research for other people to be able to validate those results and for people to be able to share the underlying data and code that underlies their scientific results. This really hit home for me a few years ago. I saw a presentation by Keith Bagley, who's in this picture from a New York Times article on the screen now. He was working on something called the Duke Cancer Study. They had read some papers about how a particular genetic-based drug that was being proposed was likely to help people suffering from a certain type of cancer. They had some questions about the methodology in the paper, tried to reach out to the original authors who originally refused to provide their data. Ultimately, they did provide their results, but it was very difficult to actually recreate the analyses that they had done because the analysis was done in a spreadsheet. They actually did some forensic data science, actually really invented the whole concept, trying to actually, because they couldn't get the original data, they actually had to measure, you know, the distance of points on a chart in the printed paper to try and recreate the data and still couldn't get the results back. Ultimately, it turned out that there was an off by one error in a formula in the spreadsheet that basically resulted in the whole analysis really collapsing. There were lawsuits, but more importantly, there were a lot of people that thought they were getting a lifesaver cancer drug, but in fact weren't. So it's a very sad story that could have been avoided if only those original researchers had taken reproducibility to heart as a principle when they were doing the original analysis. And our goal is to make that possible with Revolution R Open. By the way, this isn't just an issue in the academic and research sector. This is also a big issue in businesses. So much code from all sorts of programs, including R, is going into production today, meaning it's running in an automated fashion and underlies, you know, all sorts of aspects of the business. You know, when you get a quote for a mortgage from the bank, that's often the result of automated code running behind the scenes, which needs to be reliable, and it needs to be reused when you go into other domains. And there may be regulatory issues as well that mean you need to be able to justify the price that you gave for a mortgage perhaps years down the line. And working in a reproducible way with Microsoft R Open, with the R language, makes all of this possible. And let me show you how. I mentioned the CRAN, before I get on the CRAN time machine. For those of you that use R and use packages, this might be familiar to you. You know, I mentioned all of those packages which are so good at extending the capabilities of R, and just about anybody who uses R is probably using packages. But the good thing about packages is that they're updated all the time, they change frequently, but that's also the bad thing about packages in some situations. If you write R code, which uses, say, four or five packages, you write some code, you do an analysis, you get some results, you're ready to share that, and between the time when you actually share your results and between the time somebody actually tries to recreate your results or rerun the code, all of those packages might have changed. Now, typically, that's not going to make a difference, but sometimes people make big changes in packages that can ultimately change the results. And so a common problem for people working with R and packages when they want to share their code is it's very difficult to recreate the exact environment of R and all the different packages and those specific versions to be able to recreate the results. And that's why we created the CRAN time machine. Oh, and another point about that, by the way, is even if you use only a few packages, in fact, you might end up using many more packages than that, because packages in R depend on each other. I'm going to be using a package called ggplot2 later on in the demo. It's one of the most popular packages for doing graphics, but it in turn depends on four or five other packages who in turn depend on lots of other packages. So in this particular case, we're using just five very common packages in an example, but that explodes out to 30 or so packages that you actually need to have available to recreate the results. And if, again, between the time when you write the script and when somebody else tries to rerun your script, any of those packages has changed, there's a potential for your results to change. And that's another problem with reproducibility that we aim to solve. And that's what the CRAN time machine is all about. What we do here at Microsoft is that every day we take a complete snapshot of all the packages on CRAN. As I mentioned, there's almost 8,000 of them available today. We take that snapshot, freeze it in time, and store it on a server, which we call MRAN, the Microsoft R Archive Network. You can visit the CRAN time machine right now. It's the third link in the resource screen there. It lets you choose any date since September 17th, 2014, when we started taking these snapshots, and actually have a look at the CRAN website at that point in time and all the packages and package versions that were available then. And if you're writing R code, we make it really easy to write code that uses packages that existed at a specific point in time. It's called the checkpoint package. It's something that we provide with Microsoft R Open, and it's really easy to use. If you're writing a script, all you need to do is add two lines to the top of that script. First of all, library checkpoints to load in the checkpoint library, and the second line is to call the checkpoint function with the date you started writing that script. And in this case, we're choosing January the 28th, 2015. And the effects of those two lines of code, when you run it, is to go ahead and download onto your local system all the package versions your script uses as of that date, in this case, January 28, 2015, and all of its dependencies. So that means for you, you get a static snapshot of all the packages. Things won't change in your own environment as you're developing that code. And then when your code is finished and you want to share it with somebody else, you just need to send them that same script. They'll run that in Microsoft Open. They'll run the same checkpoint command. They'll get all the same versions of all the same packages, and they'll be able to reproduce your results exactly. And by the way, if you're an R user and you've had difficulties using different versions of different packages on the same machine at the same time, the checkpoint package solves that problem as well. And I'll be giving a demo of the checkpoint package in just a little while we get to the demo. But before we get to the demo, I believe we have a poll. Let me turn it over to you, Yanni.
Great. Thank you, David. So the poll is, if you're an R user, have you tried Microsoft R Open, or maybe you've tried Revolution R Open? So give everyone a chance to answer that. And then I think we're going into the Microsoft R Open demo right after this.
That's right.
There has been a notice about the Microsoft User Group link not working. We are aware of that, and we're looking into getting that fixed momentarily.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you, everyone, for participating in the poll. Go ahead and move on to the next slide.
All right, thank you, Yanni. So we'll go ahead and, went too far there. Let's go ahead and go into the demo. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. It's going to take a few seconds, I think, to come through. I'm going to start here by launching Microsoft R Open, the same version you would get if you went ahead and downloaded from MRAN right now. And again, that's the first link on your resources screen. I believe my screen, let me click play here. There we go. I think my screen should be coming through now. So I'm going to go ahead and launch Microsoft R Open. It's the one with the little monkey icon you can see here on the top left-hand side of your screen. Looks like it's just taking a little bit of time to come through here. There we go. So let me go ahead and launch that. So this is what Microsoft R Open looks like when you launch it. It's very similar to the standard R that you're familiar with. The only difference you can see is down the bottom, it says Microsoft R Open 3.2.3, which is the latest version. It mentions that it's using a CRAN mirror snapshot taken on January the 1st, 2016. That's part of the reproducibility with Microsoft R Open. And it also mentions that I'm using multi-threaded BLAS and LAPACK libraries detected, and it's going to be using both the cores in my Surface Pro 3 for the computations. So I'm just going to run through a few commands for anybody who might not be familiar with R. You just type them directly at the little arrow there, which is the prompt. The language, and you can define variables. So I'm going to define the variable n, or the object n, and give it the value 5,000. That little arrow symbol, by the way, might be unfamiliar, but it's a slightly idiosyncratic way of doing assignments. And you can read that as the variable n gets the value 5,000. But I can go ahead and print out the value of n just by typing its name and pressing return. And you can see that indeed n is 5,000. So let's actually do something a little bit more complicated. I'm going to create a new variable. I'm going to call it rad. All right, and I'm going to make a sequence that goes from 0 to 2 times pi, and I'm going to make it the length of n. So I'm actually going to generate 5,000 numbers that go from 0 up until 2 times pi. And if you remember your trigonometrics from school, you can probably guess where I'm going with this. But first, let me just, I can't print out that, well, I could print it out, it's 5,000 numbers, but it would fill my screen. So let's just print out the first 10 numbers of rad. So that square bracket notation is where we select parts of objects. And in this case, I'm going to just select the first 10 numbers from rad. And you can see that it's a vector here of numbers beginning with 0 and ultimately getting up to 6.4 or so, about 2 times pi. I mentioned graphics with R. Let me show you some very simple graphics. I'm going to do a plot of rad. And let's take the sine of rad. I'm going to generate a plot. It'll be popping up on your screen just as a minute. And as you might have guessed, you're probably way ahead of me, it just generates a simple sine curve, which is why I chose the numbers between 0 and 2 pi to generate my sequence. Well, that's pretty basic, but I just did that to give you a sense of the syntax. Let's do something a little bit more interesting. Let's do some actual statistics. I'm going to create another object called X. And in this case, X is going to be a matrix. And I'm actually going to create some statistical samples using a function that's built in called replicate. I'm going to take n samples, in this case 5,000 samples. And each sample is going to be random numbers from a normal distribution of length n, so 5,000. What is actually happening here is R is doing all those 5,000 simulations and then storing it in a matrix called X. And X in this case is a 5,000 by 5,000 matrix. Again, it's going to be too big for me to print, but let me just do a little selection from X, the matrix. I'm going to take the first 5 rows and the first 5 columns. So I'm using that square bracket notation again. We're just separating the two parts by commas for rows and columns. 1 to 5 means the first 5 rows and then the first 5 columns. Then what we get back is a bunch of random numbers, negative and positive. These are drawn from a standard normal distribution. And this makes me more familiar if I do this graphically. I can do a histogram with the function hist of the first column of X. I'm extracting from X. I'm not putting anything for the rows. 1 is the first column. I'm going to do that histogram. And that'll pop up on my screen. Let me bring it to the front. And you can see that traditional bell curve that comes from samples from a standard normal distribution. There we go. So let's do some computations on that matrix X. I'm going to do a matrix operation. Percent star percent means a matrix multiply in the R language. It's going to multiply by X by its own transpose. Now, if I do that, that's going to, again, fill up my screen with numbers. So let's actually take the sum of the values in X multiplied by its transpose, rather. So X is going to go, R is going to go ahead and do that computation right now. By the way, this is 125 billion separate multiplications. It's a 5,000 by 5,000 matrix multiplied by itself, so it's the cube. So this is a fairly chunky computation, and we can see the result there, about 2.5 million. Incidentally, this is one of those cases where R is using the multi-threaded math kernel libraries to do its computations. That took about 6 seconds, which isn't bad for 125 billion multiplications on my Surface Pro 3. It's not a very powerful machine. It's barely more than a tablet, but it does have two cores in it, so it was benefiting from the MKL there. If you had done that same computation, by the way, and if you're an R user, you might want to try it at your desktop right now, that same computation on my machine took a little over 2 minutes, so about 20 times as long. So again, same code, but we get some really big performance benefits when we do these multi-threaded computations. All right, now let's just using standard R there. Now, I've got to confess, this isn't actually the interface that I use when I program in R. It's pretty simple. It's good for just doing this command line type stuff. But if you're doing some heavy-duty programming with R, you might want a more sophisticated integrated development environment. My preferred development environment these days is called RStudio. It's produced by a company called RStudio. It's nothing to do with Microsoft, but it is an excellent IDE for the R language. And if you want to try out RStudio, there is a link on the right-hand side of your screen, and it works just as well with Microsoft R Open as it does with ordinary R. So I'm going to go through this one quite quickly, but I did want to showcase for you an example of using the checkpoint package and using the reproducibility features of that. And also, I'm going to do a little bit of data visualization for you using a bunch of R packages. So let me go ahead and start this. Now, rather than typing at the screen, typing at the command line, I'm actually going to just press Control Enter on my screen to copy commands from this script that I have here in the top part of the window to the command line down there at the bottom part of the window. So I'm going to head and go library checkpoint and checkpoint 2015. And it's scanning the projects, and all those actually were installed for this particular case. But I'm using packages that existed as of February the 6th, 2015. Now I'm going to load some packages that I'm going to use in these examples. These are packages contributed by the R community, many of them written, by the way, by Hadley Wickham from the RStudio team. And this particular example is I'm going to download some data from a website. You can see the URL of the website here. It's weather data for New York City over the past a little while. So let me go ahead and import that data from that website. And I've created an object called data in my system. And I can actually just double click over here and actually have a look what this is. And you can see it's daily temperature readings in New York City from 1995 up until the present day. Then I'm going to start munging with this data. I'm going to start aggregating it by years and months to calculate the maximum and minimum mean and standard error of temperatures over the past few years for each day in the calendar. And I'm going to do a whole bunch of other munging as well. I'm going to get through this quite quickly. I'm going to calculate the past lows, the present lows, the past highs, the present highs, and then start doing some graphics using that historical data. And all that. And then there's a whole bunch of code here using the ggplot package. I'm not going to go through this in any detail again, but it is a really useful package for building custom visualizations in R. I'm taking all this historical weather data, plotting lines, plotting points, doing annotations. Running through all of this code. I'll go ahead and do all that analysis for me now. And then I'm going to send a graphic to a PDF file. Let me go ahead and pull up that PDF file for you. There we go. So what we have here is actually, I mentioned Tufte in my introduction, one of my sort of inspiring pioneers on data visualization. This was one of the examples that he gave in his original book, The Visualization of Quantitative Data. He did it for New York City in, I think, 1997. And now we've updated that chart for New York City in 2014. And we can have a look over that year, have a look at the historical highs, have a look at the historical lows, have a look at the normal range here in black. The black line is the actual weather in New York City from 2014, which we've annotated with a series of exceptional lows and a few exceptional highs. And of course, the nice thing about this is that I now have this code that I can reuse. I can do it for a different city. I can do it for a different year. I can reuse that code and perhaps even make it part of a production system that is showing a weather map to people on a website. That's one of the really cool things about R there. All right, so that's it for the demo. Let me go back here to the slides. So in all this, we've been talking about the R language, which exists in Microsoft R Open. And I just wanted to let people know that we've been very busy here at Microsoft over the years, over the last couple of years, integrating R and Microsoft Open into the Microsoft stack. So if you want to use R on a server, and you want to use R with big data using additional capabilities that we've added into Microsoft R Server and run it on Linux, run it on your own Hadoop cluster, run the Teradata database, you can do all that with Microsoft R Server. If you want to run R in the SQL Server database, that's coming very soon. It's already available in public preview. And with SQL Server 2016, you've got those same big data analytics that are integrated with the SQL Server database, and you can run R directly in that database on data that exists in the database. We've also integrated R with Power BI. So if you have R scripts that do computations or create charts like that one we just saw, and you want to include those computations or those charts directly on a dashboard, you can do that with Power BI today. If you want to run R in the cloud, several options there. You can run R within Azure ML Studio, which is a nice drag and drop environment, which allows you to collect data preparation tools into R scripts and run those in our Azure cloud, and then actually call those from other applications as well through web services. I showed you early on RStudio, which is an excellent IDE for developing in R. But if you're more of a Visual Studio person, we are coming soon with R Tools for Visual Studio, which allow you to develop R applications in Visual Studio alongside with applications in other languages like C++ or C# or JavaScript, and that's coming soon. There's some links for that on the blog. If you're using Hadoop in the cloud, we have HD Insights, which is Microsoft's cloud-based Hadoop environment based in Azure, and we have some links where you can integrate R with that as well. And finally, in the Cortana Analytics Suite, Microsoft's suite of cloud-based machine learning tools, you can run R within that environment and have APIs, which will let you call out to R-based functions from mobile applications, desktop applications, web-based applications, you name it, or even run R within a virtual machine, have it do whatever you like. There are links on the slide when you receive them to all of those things, or you can have a look at the Microsoft section of the Revolution Analytics blog. And by the way, if you would like to learn more about Microsoft R Server, we have a series of webinars coming up over the next 4 weeks. Next week, my colleague Derek will be talking about using Microsoft R Server with big data to address scalability issues in R. We'll also be talking later on about data mining with Microsoft R Server, best practices for using Microsoft R Server with Hadoop, and about using Microsoft R Server to make applications based on R and using it to operationalize your analytics. You can register for all of those webinars in the same way you registered for this one at the link on your screen, and which is also the Microsoft R Server webinar link in your resources section. So let me go ahead and wrap up just to say that if you weren't familiar with R before, I have shown you why R is the leading language for data science today and how it's used for all kinds of advanced analytics applications by companies in all sorts of industries. If you haven't checked out Microsoft R Open yet, I encourage you to do so. It's 100% compatible with R while offering additional performance and reproducibility benefits. And it's also integrated with the entire Microsoft stack, as we saw a minute ago, including SQL Server, Power BI, and more. And you can download it from mran.microsoft.com. So that's all from me in terms of the formal presentation. Looks like I'm right on time. So let me hand it over to Yoni for the Q&A section. Thank you, Yoni.
Great. Thank you, David. I'd like to go ahead and run some quick polls in the background while asking some questions. One of our first questions, can we get a copy of the presentation slides? And absolutely. Today's webinar is being recorded. A link to the recording as well as the presentation slides will be emailed to you within 48 hours. to the email that you provided during your registration. Also, I was just notified that the Microsoft User Group link is back up. So that MSDSUG link, I believe, is back up. So let's see. We had lots of questions about RStudio, David. So is Microsoft R Open compatible with RStudio? Is there a GUI like RStudio? Can you answer that question?
Yeah, so first of all, yes, Microsoft R Open is absolutely compatible with RStudio. Like I said, that's what I use day to day for developing R code. I encourage people to try it. There is a link, as I mentioned, in the resource list on the right hand of your screen. Like Microsoft R Open, RStudio is free and open source. So go ahead and give it a go. Is there a GUI like RStudio? As I mentioned just a couple of slides ago, Microsoft is developing R tools for Visual Studio. So Visual Studio is a similar kind of integrated development environment, but supports not only R, but other languages like Java, C#, and JavaScript. Very good questions. Thank you. What else have we got there, Yanni?
Which is better, R or Python?
All right, that's an interesting question. I get that a lot, especially on the blog and on Twitter. People are also saying, you know, R is better and Python is better. But look, in my experience, I actually see that people quite often use R and Python together. And certainly data science departments within organizations typically have people that use R and people that use Python and some people that use both. You know, each has its strengths. I think Python is really good for the whole data ingestion, data munging part of the pipeline. You know, if you're working with streaming data or big sort of text data, Python is really good for, you know, bringing that data in and cleaning it up and getting it ready for statistical analysis. But people tend to gravitate towards R for the heavy-duty statistical analysis and visualization type of things. And that's mainly because of those packages that are available for R. You know, if you're doing any kind of econometric analysis or forecasting analysis or random forests, you know, all of those things are implemented right there for you as R packages, which just means you can get things done a lot faster than you can with other systems. But, you know, I encourage people just to use whatever language they're most comfortable with and to be ready to work with other people that might be using different languages as well. And as they're both open source projects, R and Python, you know, they both work very well together. Good question.
Great, thank you. Can I use the latest R packages with Microsoft R Open?
Yes, you can. Microsoft R Open is designed to be able to use the latest and greatest. You know, that's one of the greatest things about using R is access to all those latest packages. You know, the only difference with Microsoft R Open is that by default, you know, when you launch it, you are locked in to packages from a specific date. You know, in the current version, that's packages as they existed back on January the 1st, 2016. But we encourage people to use newer packages, and you can do that really easily just with those two lines of code using the checkpoint packages I mentioned. You know, we do that so that by default, you know, people have a constant environment. You know, they download Microsoft R Open, and by default, they have the same set of packages available to them. It doesn't change under their feet. But if you want to get access from the latest packages that were released after Microsoft R Open was released, or equally importantly, get access to packages from the past for reproducibility, that's why we created the checkpoint package to make that as easy as possible.
Great, thank you. Does Microsoft R Open do anything differently with respect to R's in-memory handling of objects?
No. Microsoft R Open works exactly the same as R does in the sense that it is an in-memory application. One difference between Microsoft R Open and regular R in that sense is that while regular R is single-threaded, Microsoft R Open is multi-threaded, which is where we get those performance benefits from. But it handles data in exactly the same way. If you're going to be working with data in R or Microsoft R Open, it means you need to store that data in an object. You saw me creating objects in the little R demo that I gave. And those objects have to be able to be stored in memory. So if you've got a 4 gigabyte machine, you know, that's pretty much the limit of the amount of data that you can bring into regular open source R. By the way, that's one of the reasons why we created Microsoft R Server, is to be able to get around or get over that particular memory limit. with Microsoft R Server, when you're doing the advanced analytics functions, like doing linear regression or random forests, you know, those types of big data algorithms, you don't have that limit in Microsoft R Server the same way you do in R or Microsoft R Open.
Thank you. A question about portability is, Microsoft R Open portable as R?
Yes, absolutely. One of the great things about the R language is its portability. It's available on a broad range of platforms. The same goes for Microsoft R Open. You can take the same code you write in Microsoft R Open on Windows and run that code in Microsoft R Open on Linux, or run that code in Microsoft R Open on Mac. And of course, as an open source project, we do make the source code of Microsoft R Open available as well, and you can build it on any system on which R itself is supported. MKL libraries are not available on any other systems other than the ones we support with binaries, though, so you'll be back to single threading in that case.
Thank you. Let's see. I have a machine with four cores, but R is only using one. If I install Microsoft R Open, can R use all four cores, with the same code?
Yep, that's absolutely the case. Yeah, that certainly is. Yeah. So if you've got some code that you're running, you know, in regular R, and you're looking at your task manager, and you're finding that only one core of your four, in this case, is actually going green and being used, you know, that's the symptom of R's single-threaded nature. But if you take exactly that same code and run that in Microsoft R Open, not only will you find that it takes less time, but when you look at your task manager, you'll find that all four cores are being used at the same time. That's the benefit of using Microsoft R Open with the MKL multi-threading libraries.
Thank you. Can you comment on the advantages of MRAN over PackRat?
Yes. So for those people that aren't aware, PackRat is another library available for R, created for the RStudio team to solve the problem of reproducibility. They tackle the problems in different way. Whereas with checkpoints and Microsoft R Open, the basic design is, you know, all the package versions you need live in the cloud, in this case on the MRAN website in our PRAN time machine. Whereas with PackRat, as the name suggests, you carry the packages around with the software. That has pluses and minuses. PackRat is a lot more flexible than Checkpoint, in the sense that with PackRat, you can mix and match different packages from different points in time. And you can't do that with Checkpoint. All the packages you use have to come from the same point in time. But on the other hand, it's a bit easier to share work using Microsoft R Open and Checkpoint than it is with PackRat. With Microsoft R Open, all I need to do is send somebody a script that contains that line, you know, library checkpoints, and they'll be able to run my code, download the packages from the MRAN website automatically, and get the same results. Whereas with PackRat, you need to pack everything together, your scripts, your data files, and all the packages you're using to that other person. So it's a little bit more of a burden for to share the code, and it's a little bit more of a burden for the person at the other end to set things up to be able to reproduce your results. But depending on your needs, you might be using one or the other.
Thank you, David. I think we have time for just one more question. You mentioned the R Consortium. What is different from the R Foundation? How is it different?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So first of all, the R Foundation, as I mentioned, was formed, I think, back in 1997. And that is the body that basically oversees the open source R projects. And it's the R Foundation that owns the R code, that manages the releases, you know, all those kinds of things. The R Consortium, by contrast, is a trade group. That its members are not the developers of R itself. Its members are representatives from various companies that either build on R or use R internally. Microsoft, as I mentioned, is a platinum member, as are the likes of Google and Oracle and HP and RStudio. The mission of the R Consortium is to promote R, especially within the business community, and to support the R community generally. One of the things that the R Consortium does is fundraise via the memberships that come from the dues that come from its members, and then fun projects suggested by the community to work around. If you'd like more information about the R Consortium, you can visit rconsortium.org.
Great. Thank you, David, so much for a wonderful presentation. Thank you, everyone, for joining. I will add the resources to the follow-up email so you have that on hand. And again, thank you again for joining us, and please join us for our upcoming webinars. Bye-bye.
Thanks for coming. Bye-bye.